You are listening to Awaken Ananda, produced by the Lighter Side Network. Visit the Lighter Side Network at thelightersidenetwork.com for hundreds of free video episodes and podcasts that explore wholeness living, energy work, communicating with spirit, and more. The Lighter Side Network, where the everyday meets the extraordinary.
Hi, and welcome to the Awaken Ananda podcast. I'm your host, Priya Lakhi of Awaken Ananda. And today, we have one of my personal friends and personal trainer on the show, Dr. Vaibhav Maurya. Dr. V, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to speak with you today about all things body, mind, and spirit. Dr. V was a medical doctor and a certified personal trainer. And so, Dr. V, I'd love to start with, how did you decide that being a medical doctor is what you wanted to do?
Well, it was really sort of by default because I come from, an Indian family and Indian American kids and Indian kids in general. Culturally, there's a big impetus to push us into either engineering or the medical field. My dad's a doctor and he always wanted me to be a physician. And at first I kind of rebelled against them and said, okay, I'm going to do computer science. I did that for a few years. And then I just end up defaulting to medicine. I mean, really, it wasn't like I came to this realization that this is what I wanted to do. It was just like, oh, you know, screw it. I guess I'll do that. I mean, it really was that simple. And I just stuck with it. And, basically I never thought about a career in the sense of doing something that was fulfilling. The idea was I wanted something that would provide me with safety and respect and money. So that was my whole incentive. Happiness wasn't even really a consideration. It was like, what's that? I didn't understand people who, because I felt pressured to choose something because I feel like everybody asks, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, oh, I have to make a decision. And I didn't know. I mean, there's certain tendencies I had, but I didn't. My wife is different. She knew what she wanted to do. I never felt that way. And I ended up doing what I gravitated towards anyway, but it took a while for me to realize that. So I'm not sure if that's really the answer you were looking for, but working out was the one thing where I felt okay. And that's what I was doing the whole time anyway. It took a lot of suffering before I realized, well, maybe I should do what I naturally do anyway, even if I wasn't getting paid for it.
So you figured out that there was something that made you happy, and that was working out.
Yes. So with medicine, during the process of going through medical school, working out was like, that was what kept me emotionally and mentally stable, and it helped me out a lot. And as I did my clinical rounds and all that stuff, it just fell to the wayside. The one thing that kind of kept me balanced was no longer in my life. And everything else seemed to kind of fall apart with that. And I was just physically and mentally tired and I just wasn't taking care of myself. Eventually I was, I realized when I was doing these hospital rounds that, I would have trouble focusing, and I went to the student health center, and they gave me a diagnosis of ADHD. They put me on Adderall, and once I could just take a pill, I didn't need to do anything else. It was like an enlightenment pill. You just take this pill, and your mind just shuts up. That was what the experience was like for me. Exercise used to do that for me, but now I had this pill that did it and didn't require any extra effort, so that's what I did.
Can you describe for us what that means to you, that your mind just shuts up? What was your mind doing before exercise or before the pill?
I always felt like I was fighting whatever natural tendency I'd have. I was trying to fit my mind into this box and channel it in a certain way, and it didn't want to conform. So everything felt like resistance. Like I felt like I was dragging myself through the motions of life. So getting anything done, I mean, even just basic things, just going to the grocery store and, you know, getting whatever books I needed for, you know, for school, just organizing my day was really difficult because I just felt like doing whatever I felt like doing. I feel like a lot of other people may be able to kind of consciously shut that off and say, okay, I need to do this and this and this. My mind never worked algorithmically. It just kind of went where it wanted to go. And that was so strong that it was really hard to fit it into, you know, what demands I had in life. So all of a sudden there's this, you know, there's this thing I can just take and I can fit in with everybody else.
Okay.
So, yeah, basically it allowed me to be in costume with everybody else and play the game and behave. But I've always felt like a square peg in a round hole.
How come?
You know, I grew up in a very chaotic household where I wasn't really taught social mannerisms until really late in life. And people never made sense to me. They still don't sometimes. although I'm able to, you know, get by pretty well now, I think. I think, you know, I've become pretty adept at socializing. But people would have these conversations and talk about things, and nothing seemed important, and everybody wanted me to make things important, and I didn't understand what the hell they were talking about. Like, I mean, and even now with, you know, conversational flow, like, it takes conscious effort for me to be interested in what people like to talk about, whether it be like, you know, the details of their job or their family relationships. Like, none of it ever seemed real to me. And it took a lot of effort for me to tune in and pay attention because it just seemed like nonsense. I just heard, like, it was like the, you know, the Peanuts cartoons. Wah, 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 wah. You know, when the teacher used to talk, they just had this wah, 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 wah sound where, you know, that's what the kids were hearing, because from their perception, that's what it sounds like, just a bunch of random noise. As far as being an adult, I had to learn that as I went along. But one thing that I'd struggled with was the social norms of being polite and, you know, of saying the right thing at the right time. They're all learned behaviors. And I didn't know what to say when. And because I didn't have that structure in place from childhood, it was always awkward for me. And I didn't understand why people, like, you know, especially I would get into relationships with, you know, I remember my girlfriend in high school, she was like, what is wrong with you? You know, you're supposed to open doors for me, and you're supposed to say thank you and please. And if you go inside a store and get something, you know, for yourself, you're supposed to ask me if I want anything. And it wasn't like I wasn't being malicious. It's just that these things never occurred to me. And all of a sudden, I had this pill that made me so hyper-focused on every little detail of managing my life that I was able to learn social behaviors that I hadn't learned in the past.
And so how did it make you feel when you were able to fit in a way that you never had before?
Well, I remember the first time I had taken some Adderall, it was like, this is what normal people feel like. I mean, that was my first thought, like, this is what it feels like to be normal. Oh, wow, I've missed that my whole life. Okay, this, because now I understand. You know, now I can follow along and I can play the game. And all of a sudden, my before I was like this really kind of, well, you know, I got along okay with people, but, you know, I was kind of moody and impulsive. But, you know, I was able to do okay in school because I had my own little study habits that worked for me. So, you know, despite the ADHD, it was fine. You know, I got by. But when I had to fit into this hospital environment where I had to deal with patients and have this very regimented routine, I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't play that game all day long without some assistance. So, you know, having this chemical in my body that, you know, shot out dopamine, it gave me the ability to do what everybody else was doing, basically.
And so as you were able to do what everybody else was doing, did you feel more of a sense of a belonging, or did you almost feel like you were acting?
I felt like whatever defect I was born with was fixed because of this pill. So it became very important to me to have it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say it did give me a sense of belonging, and it made me feel like I had a chance to succeeding in the world as it is.
Okay. And so how long did that last, the rounds and all of that stuff? How long were you on Adderall, and do you continue to take it, or what was your journey with that?
I'm somebody who doesn't like limits of any sort. So when I realized I can take this pill and all of a sudden I can go from, you know, being 50% functional to all of a sudden I'm this hyper-functional adult who can do whatever he wants to do and focus and get anything done. And, you know, I could do tons of things. And then I'm like, well, if I take a little more, then I can get more done. And if I take a little more, then I can get more done. And then with medical school and my residency training, you know, you're having to take care of patients throughout the night, you know, because you're on call. And I was like, oh, crap, you know, if this stuff wears out when I'm on call taking care of patients, somebody might get hurt, somebody might die, and it's going to be on me. So I better make sure that I am, you know, 100% at all times. So it became imperative that I always be in this state of being attentive and focused. And, you know, so I would do whatever it took to get more of it when I ran out. And over time, what happened is I started running out. So I started forging prescriptions, going to different pharmacies, running around town, you know, getting it filled, having enough. Because, and the funny thing is, it was coming out of what I thought was a good place, because I'm like, well, I don't want to hurt anybody. I want to do my job. You know, I want to give my all at all times, and I need to be this superhuman at all times. So I will do whatever I need to do. And that's how I rationalized it. I'm like, look, I'm just doing my job. I'm trying to do a good job. I'm doing my best. I'm actually a pretty damn good physician when I'm properly medicated.
Okay. And so the Adderall became the primary focus of keeping on getting it and getting it and getting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Later when I did end up going to rehab at a few years into this addictive cycle. So basically I was doing my pediatric residency and it got worse and worse and worse. And my last year of residency, you know, when it really just took off, I got busted. A pharmacist busted me and said, hey, you filled Adderall at 5 different pharmacies in 1 month, and yeah, we need to talk. So I was confronted. I was sent into treatment, and you know, basically, what I remember, I went into an inpatient rehab where I was actually with other physicians who had problems with addiction, and everybody was, you know, required to go to 12-step meetings and get a sponsor. And I remember my my sponsor told me when we were talking about my history of addiction that I had made the Adderall my higher power.
Wow.
Like that was God to me as far as I was concerned. And it was, I mean, it really was. You know, I mean, you could spend 10 years meditating or you could just take a pill. And what made a lot more sense to me was just take a pill.
Because with that pill, you achieved a level of normalcy that you hadn't in years.
Yeah. Yeah. So imagine you have a stereo turned up all the way and you take a pill and it's just off. It just gets turned all the way down to mute. And all of a sudden I can hear only what I need to hear. And that's what it was like. And exercise used to do that for me, but only for like 2 hours afterwards.
Right. And now you had something that was easily accessible to you because
Absolutely.
You were a physician.
Yes.
And in your mind at the time, you thought, well, this is how I do my job best.
Yes.
And my job requires my best all the time.
Yes. And you know, it carried on to all other aspects of life, because once I was turned on into a state where I wanted to be. I wanted to be like that 24/7 when I'm in that hospital, when I'm with my wife, when I'm with my parents. I wanted to be that guy all the time.
Because that guy felt amazing all the time.
Yeah, that guy was successful. That guy had his stuff together.
Okay.
You know?
And so when that pharmacist had that conversation with you and confronted what had very clearly become an addiction, what was that moment like for you?
Well, at first I was like, I was hoping nothing would become of it, because basically she's like, well, I'm going to photocopy your driver's license and I will contact you when I have more to report. And it was my residency program director who called me the next morning. So in the interim, I was just thinking, okay, that didn't just happen. You know, kind of like, nothing's going to become of it. She'll just ignore it. Maybe a slap on the wrist. But it was a lot more than that. It was this entire, you know, hospital administration that came and had a meeting with me, with my director. And, you know, I had invested so much to prop up this image of myself as this overachieving physician, and I was successful at it. And it was taken away in a moment, you know? Like, ever since then, I can't... I'd put so much emotional investment into it, so much energy into it, so much of my life force into it, and it just seemed not to be real anymore.
Right.
I mean, because it can just go away like that. So I was kind of at the peak of my career when I got caught. This was the last day of my residency. I was finishing the program. I was going to move to Atlanta with my wife. We had already bought a condo in the Atlanta area. I was going to be doing a fellowship in neonatology or NICU at Emory, you know, and I was going to do a fellowship and I felt like $1 million and I was going to be making $1 million, you know?
Right.
So, you know, and every day I would say, you know, okay, I just need to hold on a little while longer. I'll stop doing this when I get to point whatever, point C or point D or whatever. You know, I kept putting off the deadline of when I would stop abusing Adderall.
So if part of you knew that this had to stop.
Oh, yeah, because I would be up for days at a time.
Okay.
And eventually I would just start doing weird stuff. Like I would just take apart like my laptop and I don't know, like it just makes you do weird things. I mean, you know, people who do meth, it's called being tweaked out.
Right.
Right. You just get obsessed over little things and you just dismantle things just to see what's inside and you figure you can, you know, rewire a gadget. So I would just do really weird things in the middle of the night because I couldn't sleep and I would be up for days at a time. And I knew that, you know, this is going to, something horrible is about to happen. I don't know what, I don't know when, but this is, you know, but you know, in my mind, I was like, okay, hold on a little while longer, hold on a little while longer. When you get to Atlanta, when you start your fellowship, you know, you can stop. But there was never a good stopping point.
Right.
It was never, I mean, because I always had to be this person, so it never felt like I could stop.
Right. Well, because the opposite of this person for you and your experience...
was a loser as far as I was concerned.
Was not who you wanted to be.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I was concerned, that guy's a loser. I don't ever want to be that guy again. That guy has no chance.
And so when the medical director called you the next morning and you knew in your heart of hearts that the time had come, can you describe what that felt like and what you knew was going to happen next?
It was a moment that was frozen in time. I didn't know. For the first time probably in my adult life, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right. And so what did happen?
So they sent me, so I got pretty much what I wanted. They sent me, they referred me to several different addictionologists or psychiatrists who specialize in addiction medicine. They suggested, you know, inpatient rehab. So I wanted to do the thing that was going to be the easiest for me to do. So there was a psychiatrist on their list who lived. So we moved to Atlanta anyway, right? So I went from being matched into this fellowship that I really wanted to being unemployed. So we had already bought the condo. We moved to Atlanta and I'm unemployed. Right. I have no job. I don't even have a license because they took my license away.
Wow. As a fellow Indian.
Yeah.
I want to go back just to the beginning of the story. How did you face your family who had...
I didn't.
You didn't.
I refused to speak to them because I was so ashamed.
Okay.
So I spoke to them through my wife. I didn't talk to them for 3 months, I think. It wasn't because I hated them. It was because I was ashamed.
Right.
Because I failed them. So it was just something that I just couldn't look them in the eye about it. Because, I felt like I just destroyed my life, and what are they going to think of me?
I can only imagine how hard that was. And so as you went through rehab.
So I didn't go through rehab at first. There was this tumultuous 3 years afterwards. This was from 2009 through 2011, late 2011, early 2012. I had found an outpatient psychiatrist who said that he had diagnosed me as having poor coping mechanisms, but he wasn't ready to call me an addict. So he prescribed me a very similar drug called Vyvanse, which was perfect. So I was off the Adderall for a month or two, and then he put me on Vyvanse, which, you know, put me right where I wanted to be again, right? But the circumstances had changed. This fellowship program that I was going to go to at Emory, they dropped me, and I didn't have a license for a while. And eventually the Georgia Medical Board gave me my license back, and I was allowed to go into practice. But nobody wants to hire a pediatrician who abuses prescription drugs. Go figure, right?
Well, right.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's just one, like, and the blows keep coming.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, I've tried to get jobs and, you know, in the Atlanta area and outside the Atlanta area, and I wasn't having any luck. And I was just so, I didn't want to, because basically I had to tell every potential employer that, hey, I screwed up. Could you please hire me? You know? And the shame was just so deep that I didn't even want to do that. I mean, just the energy to go out and just look for a job was just, I didn't want to do it. So this is when my wife was like, okay, there's this meditation center, you know, close by. You want to give it a go? Because she knew that I was a pretty militant atheist. You know, I mean, I knew what it was about. I knew it was all... Everything existed in the material realm, and that's where it was. And if I didn't have that, then I didn't have anything. So why waste my time with anything else? You know, I already concluded that. So I was, every material achievement that I felt I had accumulated was stripped away. And I had nothing else to do. So I'm like, screw it. We'll go to this meditation center. And it was actually, right here, Atlanta Soda Zen Center, right down the street. And some weird stuff started happening.
Okay. And you had never meditated before?
No.
And was this while you were still on the Vyvanse?
It was. And okay. The thing is, at this stage of my journey, it was very helpful.
Okay.
So there was a certain stage of my journey where the silence that this drug helped me achieve at baseline was able to be deepened through meditation. And I had access to, I guess I can say, states of consciousness, which I think at the time, unmedicated, I wouldn't have. I don't know that for sure. I can't say. I don't know. But that's just how it was.
For you.
Yeah, for me. Absolutely. For me, that's just how it was. So I had nothing to do at the moment. I was unemployed, and I meditated all day. Pretty much. And I started listening to spiritual teachers. I remember I really got into Eckhart Tolle, and something was happening on. So I was at a stage in my life where, like, I was like, you know what? If I go nuts right now, that'd be great. Because everything was so intolerable that being completely crazy seemed like a good idea.
Mm.
So I was willing to let any concept of how the world works go. If there was something else, I wanted it. If there was some escape, whatever it was, I didn't even care anymore. I just wanted out. And I wasn't at a stage where I was suicidal, so that wasn't an option. I just wanted, I'm like, if this thing exists, if there's something else, I want to know what it is. So as I started meditating, I remember I would look after a couple months of doing this. At first, it was just states of peace where I'm like, oh, I feel really good. This feels really groovy. I like this, you know? And then I would look at my reflection in a mirror in the morning, and I didn't know who it was in the mirror. I literally didn't understand what I was looking at. And I got scared. It was terrifying to me. And I remember going to one of my, you know, acquaintances at the Zen Center being like, I don't know what's happening, but I don't know who the person in the mirror is anymore.
And so who was that?
And the thing is, I don't mean it metaphorically. I really just, some part of me is like, whoa, what the hell is that? Like this alien thing staring back at me. It was like this disidentification that happened, where like I knew that thing that I was staring at, there was some distance from it all of a sudden. I was viewing it from another perspective, where it was actually something that was foreign. As far as I was concerned, I was that thing in the mirror before, and now I'm not, and what am I? I didn't know anymore.
And so you were in the process of what some of us might term an awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Of this, I thought I was this one thing, but now I'm starting to question, who am I and what am I doing here?
And, you know, I had this voracious appetite. Whatever spiritual thingamajig was out there, I want to know. Like, it started with Eckhart Tolle and then Adi Shanti, then quantum physics, and then just whatever it was, I wanted it. And it just kept speaking to me. Like something was happening that was beyond my control and I could not help myself. I would lay on my floor and I would just listen to Eckhart Tolle satsangs that he would have, or, you know, gatherings where they would just be these full day recordings. I would literally sit there as if I was attending a satsang and just lay on my floor listening to it. That's what I'd do. My wife would come home and I was laying on the floor listening to a satsang.
And was that your start of your healing, the start of your rehab? I know it wasn't technically rehab, but is that where it started?
It was the very beginning. Something had happened and I never wanted to face the world again.
Okay.
I was done. I'm like, okay, hopefully my body will just start to disappear now. And I will just cease to exist and I'll be done.
Okay. So your awakening and all of the knowledge you were soaking up like a sponge, instead of wanting to re-enter the world, was forcing you to think about how can I...
I want to transcend it.
Transcend it.
I want it out. Because now the real world, quote unquote, felt horrible. Everything felt horrible. Going to the grocery store felt horrible. I became a complete recluse. You know, as a human being, I became kind of useless because I didn't want to do anything except listen to spiritual stuff and meditate and hopefully disappear. And, you know, at some point I was hoping like, okay, maybe the way it works is, you know, there's this Bible thing that says in the world, but not of it, right? I just wanted not of it. I wanted that part, you know, and in the world, I wanted to maybe exist without really existing. To kind of walk around but not really be there, yeah. Almost being unconscious.
I've definitely had moments of that in my awakening, and so I can understand that. I've had moments, but it sounds like you had longer periods than just moments.
Years.
Okay. Years. So talk us through what happened after that. So we know how you ended up today as my fantastic personal trainer.
Thank you. So eventually... I got a job through my dad as a pediatrician. He had an acquaintance near you know, this was near Macon, which is like an hour south of here, south of the Atlanta area, who, you know, was willing to take me on. And so I, you know, started practicing again. And, you know, before I was this person who, I was a human being among other human beings. Although I knew I was kind of, I always felt kind of ill-fitting, but I could play the game. Like I felt like a somebody, right? But now I'm like this, I don't know what I didn't fit in anymore. Like, the world made even less sense than it did before. And everything just felt so heavy all the time. So, you know, I worked part-time as a pediatrician, and I started repeating the same cycle. I started popping pills again. You know, I would take more Vyvanse this time. And then after, you know, I struggled with it for about 3 years on and off. I'd do it part-time, then I'd take a little break, then I'd do it part-time again. And every time I stepped back in and tried to work, I just, you know, I would do the same thing. I would just have to medicate myself into oblivion so I could deal with the world. And I started forging prescriptions again.
Okay.
And I got busted again.
Wow.
And I am amazed that I didn't go to jail, because my doctor never pressed charges. But he did tell me, look, you either go to rehab or I will call the authorities. And the Georgia Medical Board's like, look, if you ever want to practice again, you have to go to rehab. And basically I said, no, thanks, I'm not practicing anymore. And that's when the suicide attempt started.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to go to rehab.
But I no longer had this pill that made me feel okay. Because, you know, basically my whole thing, I wanted to feel okay under all circumstances and never suffer again. And if it took this pill that I can take all the time, and as long as I had that, I could be homeless for all I care. As long as I had enough Vyvanse and Adderall to get me by, I'll be okay. And with all the spiritual stuff, I mean, I was like, it wasn't just because, you know, I was on the ADHD drugs prior to these experiences, but with the combination of that and all these experiences I have, I mean, I could stay in this place where I was just high all the time. And not just because of, I mean, in part, yes, because of the drugs, but it was that and the other stuff I had experienced put me into state where, like, I'm like, if I could just kind of hang out here and not do anything, it'd be perfect.
Mm.
You know?
But that's not reality.
I guess not. I mean, it didn't work. Let me just put
it didn't
that
work.
It didn't work. Sure. I'll just put it that way. So I ran out of all the Adderall and Vyvanse, and I basically at that point in my journey, I was like, okay, I think I know what's going to happen. I pretty much knew I'd get caught again. I think that was part of my journey. But, you know, I think I'm enlightened enough where I don't need the drugs anymore. And I'll be fine. I'll tough it out on my own. It'll get out of my system. And I'll be all enlightened and stuff, and I'll be fine. Right? After about a month, I everything I didn't want to face came back in. All the darkness in my heart just... It was the lowest point of my life. So,
And you had suicide attempts at that time.
Yeah. I bought a handgun and I would put it in my mouth and try to pull the trigger.
Wow.
I did that every day as a ritual for months. And just hoping that, you know, today will be today. Today will be today. And it almost got absurd. It almost got funny at some point, because I was literally fighting with decisions like, I could either eat breakfast or kill myself. I could either hang out with my wife tonight or I could kill myself. Like, I mean, every point in the day I was confronting that decision, because I had this gun and I could take my life at any point. So life was reduced to absolute absurdity. Like,
yeah.
Like when you're at that point where, like, it doesn't even matter anymore, it changes your perspective on life. You know, there's something about that I did take away that's been helpful. How fragile it is.
Hmm.
You know?
Fragile life is.
Life is, yes. And you know, how it could change in a blink of an eye, you know? And anyway, so after a few months of struggling with that, I finally told my parents, I told my wife, I'm like, I need help. So that's when I went to rehab, where, like, they kind of, you know, they put me on some other psychiatric medications, which got me out of the hole, got me out of the depression, put me in an environment where I was around other people who were trying to get their lives back together. Very nurturing environment. it was fantastic. It took me months to be able to accept it. It took me months to accept that I was even an addict, because I just thought that I had this neurochemical defect that needed to be fixed, and you guys don't understand.
Right. So you got out of rehab, and how did you transition to then knowing that personal training and helping people with their body and mind and spirit is the road, in fact, that you wanted to take?
So when I, during the months when I was suicidal, there was one point in a day where everything seemed okay. It was when I worked out. I had this 1 hour a day of reprieve where my mind was silent. And I felt the way I felt when I was on the Adderall and Vyvanse. And that's the only thing that worked.
And it was working out during that 1 hour a day.
Yeah, I had this 1 hour a day of reprieve where I felt okay. And that would go away. And when I went to rehab, I just felt completely nuts all the time. So the one thing that kept me feeling okay, and it became an addiction in and of itself, but when I was exercising, when I was working out, when I was pushing my physical body intensely, it silenced my mind. I mean, I felt, it was like I had this pent up energy that just needed to be released. When I would work out hard enough, afterwards, nothing really bothered me anymore. I think it was unhealthy because I was really trying to numb myself. So, you know, it became its own little obsession. But it worked, you know? So I'm like, okay, how do I, you know, so I had the same mentality with the working out of the day with everything else. How do I do this all day long?
Right.
Right?
Right.
How do I never leave this state?
Right.
Right. Everything, my entire adult life has been this pursuit of this transcendent state of consciousness, and I wanted to just be there all the time. Like, ever since I got a taste of it, I don't want anything else. I don't care. Anything else I do is in service of that.
Of transcendence.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
And now, as you've brought balance into your life, because even that obsession has balanced itself out, you bring, what is it that you want to do in the gym when you work out with someone like me or any of your other clients? What is it that you want us to leave that space with, knowing your full journey and how you got there? What's important for you, for us to know?
So for me, the problems of the mind can't be resolved in the mind. There has to be another way. And for me, my body is a much more sensitive indicator of where my state of consciousness is than my mind is. My mind will just talk to itself, you know, ad nauseum, talk itself into a hole, and it usually goes negative, you know? But my body always tells the truth. If I feel tension in a certain area, it may be because I was thinking about something that's stressing me out. It usually is. If I have a headache, it's because I'm probably thinking about something negative. If I have a stomach ache, it's almost always emotional. I resolve the emotion. I resolve the internal conflict. I resolve, you know, whatever thing is bothering me, and my body heals. So a lot of people who come to me, I see this very often, and I think I draw these type of people because I know how to work with it, is people who experience chronic pain. And the last thing they want to do is work out because they hurt. And sometimes they're on the cusp of getting these injections into their muscles to relax their muscles, taking muscle relaxants, taking antidepressants. And give me like 2 minutes with them, I can help them tune into their muscle. And making that connection and making them aware of these things that they were previously unconscious of, instead of trying to solve the problem at the level of the mind, saying, okay, yeah, this at work, blah, 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 yada, 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 yada. They could talk about their problems all day long. But ask them to focus on the physical manifestation in their body and solve it at that level. and the mental stuff goes away.
And that's now what brings you joy, is to help other people do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful. I want to really thank you for sharing your story with such deep authenticity.
Yeah.
And the courage to share all of the ups and downs of that struggle. And it's really beautiful to watch you on the other side of that, because you are a personal trainer that not just impacts my physical shape, but you ask questions and allow me to think in a much broader worldview. So I really want to appreciate you for that. So I have a few questions for you just to close out this interview. And I'm just going to ask you just to give a one or two word response to them. And so the first one is, what do you think the world needs today?
It needs to leave the old level of consciousness behind. Okay. I don't think we're going to ever work our problems out or settle our differences or end war or end poverty or end anything. I think getting people to a level where, see, this is hard to say without sounding pretentious. It really is. But I really mean this. Like, people need perspective. And you cannot get perspective as long as you're stuck at the level of the mind. And that's where 99.9% of the world is. And I find myself stuck there quite often. Even you know, I don't live in this place all the time. I mean, I'm there a lot more than I used to be, and that's great. But it's a moment-to-moment thing, and it takes some responsibility on my part to take care of myself. But most people, they see everything as somebody else's problem. So if they fix the world, all of a sudden they'll feel okay. No, they won't. The world could be a Garden of Eden for all I care, and they would still find a way to make it miserable, unless their consciousness changes.
Mm. So what do you believe in today?
I don't like the word believe. Because I would say I don't believe anything. It's more of a sensing. The perspective I hold, at least at my better moments, is I am a function of the universe. Something is working through me, and I'm just playing my part. So as far as this personal relationship to God or some divine entity, I don't believe that. And it's like, see, this is beyond belief and not belief. That's a duality, which I just don't even, you know, I don't even understand what that means anymore. But I just feel like my journey has been a deconstruction so that something else can flow through me and do its job, which has been the whole point anyway. And it's not done yet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like to call that a breakdown to breakthrough.
There you go.
And that's exactly what Awaken Ananda is all about. And that's why we were so excited to talk to you today about your story.
Yeah.
And so, Dr. V, if people want to know more about you, where should I send them? Where should they go? What's your Instagram and your Facebook and your website?
So my website is www.bodybyvfitness.com. My Instagram, it's a clumsy one, body_by_v_fitness. I know that's a clumsy name, but you know, that's what it is. And then I think my Facebook is just Body by V Fitness.
Body by V Fitness.
Yeah.
And you do offer one-on-one personal training sessions here in Atlanta. Is that right?
Yes, I do. In Midtown.
In Midtown. And for anyone who's interested, I highly recommend you check him out. Dr. V does a free one-hour session just to see if you guys are a good fit. And he's definitely getting me into shape. And so all of Dr. V's information can be found on the website. And Dr. V, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. And I'm super, super grateful for your realness and your rawness today.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to the Awaken Ananda podcast. You can find out more about podcast episodes upcoming and events that are happening and the work that I do at awakenananda.com. The Instagram is also at awakenananda. That's A-N-A-N-D-A. And Facebook at awakenananda. And I'm really grateful to have each of you listening to our episode today. And get ready to awaken your inner guru.
The ideas expressed by guests of Awaken Ananda do not necessarily reflect Priya's personal beliefs. Information received from the Awaken Ananda podcast should not be used as a substitute for medical or psychological advice. If you're interested in working with Priya, sign up for a transformational coaching or intuitive healing session at awakenananda.com. Listen to more episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms, and be sure to visit Priya and the Lighter Side Network at thelightersidenetwork.com. The Lighter Side Network, where the everyday meets the extraordinary.